哦，好。完
The meeting of the Education, Finance, and Economic Competitive Division will come to order. Today's agenda item is the Higher Education Workforce Development Bill. From the Higher Education Division,
Madam Chair.
The amendments are in. The minutes are in our packet. Representative Demmer. Representative Demmer moves adoption of the minutes of the previous meeting as printed. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The minutes are adopted. Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, I move that House File 797 be recommended to pass and re-referred to the Finance Committee.
Representative Rukavina moves adoption of the Higher Education Workforce Development Division report for House File 797, First Committee Engrossment. At the end of the meeting, we will be voting on the bill with the motion. The chair moves that HF House File 797, First Committee Engrossment, be recommended to pass as amended and re-referred to Finance Committee. All in favor of accepting the Rukavina motion to accept the division report, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. Representative Rukavina, will you please present your bill?
Well, Madam Chair, I have an amendment to my bill.
Could we take that after your presentation?
Short presentation in keeping with my stature, Madam Chair. I will make a very short. So,
well, it's,
Madam Chair,
I expect that you're going to be heading north as I am after this meeting, too.
Yes.
So it's always good to get out of the city before the traffic of the heavy traffic of the afternoon starts.
That's
don't you
right.
think, Representative Rukavina?
I head north. I head north because that's my freedom to breathe act up there. So. Anyway,
please proceed.
Madam Chair, members, I think this is a really good bill. I spent for those of you that aren't on the Higher Ed Workforce Development Committee, the first month listening to students from all over the state and from all of the different higher education institutions, and then the faculty that teaches them. And, you know, we were made aware that there's just a problem with tuition in this state. And, in fact, the woman from the Minnesota Daily, young lady, came in and interviewed me this morning for the Daily. And I asked her, well, how are you doing on your financing? And in her first year, she's accumulated $19,000 in debt. So I guess it just, you know, reemphasizes that position. So in Articles 1, 4, and 6, we've done a lot to make post-secondary education in the state of Minnesota affordable. There's over $45 million in here, almost 46 over the next 2 years for our MINSCU system. In tuition cuts, there's $24 million in tuition relief at the University of Minnesota, including, Madam Chair, you'll be happy to know, about $2.4 million a year to help with outstate or tuition at UMD and Morris and Crookston. There is, and in doing that, in working with the University of MINSCU system, I have to say this bill funds almost all of their requests, at sometimes at a little less dollar amount than they wanted, but I think everybody seems to be happy. There's $60 million over the biennium in this for our state grant program in either reallocating or new money. We lower the student obligation by a half a percentage point and increase the living and miscellaneous expenses by almost $900. there's over $396 million for our higher education systems in this bill. We gave the governor a lot of what he wanted and give over $2 million for his ACHIEVE program. In the workforce development, workforce part of this bill, there's a lot of initiatives that came forward in, for the biotechnology industry in this state. There's relief in here for our GIs coming home, $10 million a year in new spending for GI Bill that the governor wanted. There were a lot of programs for youth and workforce development that had canceled that we kept going in this state. If you look at the spreadsheet, Madam Chair, that under this spreadsheet here that I'm working off of, I'll highlight the at least the governor's request that we gave money to the ACHIEVE grants is $1 million a year. The GI Bill, $10 million a year. The state grants we gave at his number, close to his number. Reciprocity, the learning network, compensation adjustments at the Office of Higher Education. I would be remiss if I didn't mention, Madam Chair, that we gave the compensation requests at both at the request of both the university and the MNSCU system. At MNSCU, we did their recruit and retention request at 4.8 and 7.3 million. Their STEM request at 8 and 8. The infrastructure technology request a little less than what the governor funded, but I think it's something that the MNSCU system can live with. We, in going down in the University of Minnesota base, did similar to what the governor did in the health and workforce and clinical science request, the science and engineering request, the environment, ag systems and renewable energy request, and the technology request. We funded the Mayo Genomics Project at the same dollar amount as the governor over, except we gave $10 million in cash the first year and $7 million ongoing in the Rochester Mayo University request, which I think people are happy with, but, you know, nobody's actually come forward and given me a hug on that one, but I think they would behind my closed door. But anyway, in the employment and economic development base, we the governor had request the University Enterprise Laboratory, the redevelopment grants, the small community technical assistance, the urban initiative. Some of these, I might add, we gave a little more money than what the governor asked for. The extended unemployment, extended employment base, both basic and MI, we did, I think, a little higher than the governor's request. The SSP communication centers, the Evoke rehab, and compensation adjustments were all at the governor's request. All the small agencies within our budget we funded at the governor's request, except maybe the Board of Barber and Cosmetology we did at their base. And there's a lot of individual bills in here, including I funded every request by the Republicans, that bill that came to my committee. So, Madam Chair and members, I don't know how you want to handle it, Madam Chair, as far as questions on the bill right now, or if you want me then to do my amendment, the A37 amendment, or would you I wait?
I think this is a good time to do your A37 amendment, the author's amendment.
Madam Chair, if I could make just one small oral amendment to my amendment on page 5.
It's A37.
Yeah, the A37 amendment, line 5.30, if I could eliminate, delete one time in the middle of the line.
Page 5, line 30, yeah. Delete one time.
Mm-hmm. So
you can incorporate that, Representative Rukavina.
Okay. And Madam Chair, here's what the amendment does. The all of the dollar changes up there are either adjustments for the Volk rehab hard of hearing that, Madam Chair, I put in the original bill included in that vocational rehab request of the governor's, which matched federal money 3-1. Your bill that for the hard of hearing, and I was told that that $350,000 wouldn't get matched then by the federal government because we put a condition on it. So that fixes that. It also increases, or there's a change in a little deed, $10,000, I think, request that the governor's office had asked for to keep a program alive, that a deed that got eliminated in the Senate bill. So it's really more of a technical thing there. The Section 4, and basically all the way through page 4, at the top of the page, deals with Representative Greiling's concern in my bill about school readiness. I have in the bill a incentive for MNSCU to get the testing done to try to correct the remedial type programs we have had to do with some of our high school kids entering college. And I guess there was concern by the Minnesota School Board Association that I was doing something with their testing and having to give new tests, which I didn't intend to do. So this just clarifies that the current tests and just give them at an earlier time, and Representative Riley can comment on that if she wants. The lines 4.7 through 4.10 deal with the DREAM Act, that where I intended in my bill to have the resident requirement that was in or the incentive for these children to get their residency in that, and it was left out of that amendment. The school readiness, again, on lines 4.14, I believe, is for Representative Greiling's correction. And basically, the rest of them correct that the Volk rehab for the deaf that I talked about. And the rest of them are basically kind of technical corrections, other than that deed investment redevelopment grant fund language is on page 5 that I told you the governor's office had wanted. And on lines 5.17 to 5.18 is Representative Greiling's request. On the fly, we kind of had some discussion when the bill came out of committee about reducing her request, which I did a one-time appropriation. This makes it $125,000 each year. And the rest of it is basically just technical corrections dealing with your vocational rehab bill, Madam Chair, and Representative Greiling's amendment for the extended employment there on page lines 5.29 to 5.32. And there's a fee correction that deposits fees in the general fund instead of in the statutory.
Made a statutory appropriation.
It made a statutory appropriation to the commissioner, which I didn't like, and so the fees are directed to the general fund. And that is the amendment, Madam Chair.
Representative Rukavina moves the office amendment A37, adoption of A37. Are there any questions? Representative Demmer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Rukavina, I noticed that in the standards area you had lots of references to conferring, the commissioner conferring with MNSCU to make sure that the standards are have the proper credentials, the proper rigor, I guess, to qualify them for 2-year and 4-year college institutions. Why did you choose MNSCU when we have private colleges and the University of Minnesota in addition to other places? Why MNSCU only?
Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, I'll defer to Representative Greiling, who worked to draft this. So I think Minsky is the one that...
Representative Greiling.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Demmer, we put that in here because that's the group that's working with P16. I'm fine with conferring with the others as well, or with the university especially. But I think that just to make sure that they confer when they have... We're trying to have the same test so that students don't have to take a test twice, and so that the test works for entrance exams. And obviously there are entrance requirements. Obviously there are different requirements for different groups. And so if it's standardized for the main one that we have under our purview with state statutes, the university obviously has constitutional authority, and the private colleges and universities can do whatever they want. And so this is the one group that we actually have a chance to have our laws have an impact on. I think the others should pay attention, because if students have a chance to go to Minsky universities and colleges and their test is done and it's already counted, that could give a leg up for students choosing those places. But I think we don't want to mandate things for private colleges, and we can't for the university.
Representative Demmer.
Well, Madam Chair, I guess I agree. Obviously, it's a good... My concern when I read it is we're saying for credit that will be accepted at two-year colleges and two-year and four-year colleges. And, of course, we can't say that that private colleges, for example, have to accept those, and we don't give people the wrong impression that they will be automatically accepted. But if you are comfortable with that, I guess that's okay. That's what I think in principle we agree with that. I'm just concerned that we don't give a wrong impression there that we're going to say the university and or private colleges have to accept that because Minsky said it was okay.
Any other questions? Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Rukavina, perhaps my recollection is wrong on this, but I thought I remember that the workforce development fee was going to be sunsetting to a lower rate, and I'm wondering if you're doing anything with that rate in this bill. I don't see anything, but we're on the amendment. Sorry, Madam Chair. It's the cold medicine again.
Okay. Hold it just for a minute. Okay. Any other questions? All in favor of adoption of the 837 amendment, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Rukavina, it was my recollection that under current law, the workforce development fee was going to sunset to a lower rate. Are we doing anything with that in this bill?
Yeah, we're deleting the sunset.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative, where is that in the bill?
It would be, let me see if I can find it. It's probably towards the end of the bill. Maybe.
And maybe.
Madam Chair, maybe counsel could help me, Ms. Novak. I delete the sunset to 0.85 and leave it at 0.10.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, maybe it would be easier if someone could point me where in the research summary I could see that.
Ms. Novak.
Madam Chair and Representative, it's in Article 7. I need to find it where in Article 7.
I'm looking to...
Madam Chair, it's
Ms.
on page 92.
Page 92 of the summary?
No, of the bill.
Of the bill.
I don't see it there.
It is?
No, I don't think. No. I don't think that's right.
I'm sorry, that's not right. Madam Chair, it's page 94 and page 95, and it's on the top of page 95, the stricken language on lines 1 to lines 3.
Okay. Madam Chair.
Representative Garofalo.
And Madam Chair, so I find that under, one sec here while I find it.
Madam Chair, Representative Garofalo, page at the top of page 95, by deleting the language, it leaves the fee at 0.10%.
Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, any idea what that'll, on a biennial basis, what that'll, how much more revenue that'll raise?
The same amount that you guys raised the whole time you've been, you were in power in 8 years, because it was scheduled to be reduced. About $3 million a year, $6 million a biennium.
Representative Garofalo.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Rukavina. I'm on cold medicine today, so I won't engage you, Representative Rukavina. Okay.
Well, members, just for sake, it was scheduled to go down, I believe, back in early 2001, and it never went down. And if Representative Gunther were here, he could attest to the fact that a lot of stuff that came out of the general fund got piled into this account, and so it was never, ever reduced. That language was put in there, and I would venture to say that if you were still in control of the House, you'd probably have the same language in this bill as I do.
Representative Garofalo.
Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, last session, the House's language was to leave the sunset in there. It was the Senate position to increase the fee. In conference committee, that's the position that prevailed. So, no, that's just not true if we were in charge. But we won't bring up the inconvenient fact that I actually voted for the amendment in committee 2 years ago. I sided with Chair Gunther, but that'd be a different issue. So,
you must be on cold medicine to reveal that to us.
No, Madam Chair.
Truth and honesty is always such a good thing.
You're not on truth serum; it's the cold medicine.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, if I want to point it out, I'm sure that Representative Slawick would have reminded me in the committee as well, because she was there.
Representative Demmer, our question on another question on the bill as a whole?
Not right now.
Oh, okay. Representative Wardlow?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking at Article 2, the Minnesota GI Bill for Veterans, and I noticed that there's $5 million less per year than what the governor requested. And given the fact that when Wisconsin did their GI Bill, many students left the U of M and went to Wisconsin because of it. And I know that one of the goals of this GI Bill, not only to recognize our veterans, but it's also to attract and keep students and future workers in our state, because our workforce is depleting, and these young men and women who come out of the service are good, young, healthy bodies, and we want to train their minds and keep them in Minnesota as workers. I was just wondering if you'd speak to that.
Representative Rukavina.
I'm Chair, Representative Wardlow. We have $10 million each year in here for the GI Bill. I think that it's adequate. I had it coming in at $7 million each year. Representative Haas and Severson wanted it increased. Representative Haas made a motion to make it 10 and 10. I accepted it. It went on. I think we should see how the, you know, there's a lot of relief in here for students, regardless of whether they're returning GIs or the students that came to us talking about all their debt. And I do have to say that I had two different occasions, I had returning GIs in my office with other students, and both times they told me, I'm okay, take care of these students. I'm getting by, I'm doing okay. So, you know, I listened to that, and we've got $10 million each year in reference to Wisconsin. My understanding is they, you know, have quite a few more GIs than us over there, and I can't remember the exact numbers, but they're first year of their program used about this much money. So I'm hoping that it'd be adequate. I think it will be adequate, and we'll see how the program works, and we can always adjust it.
Representative Wardlow.
I do thank you for having the bill, though. I do appreciate that. Thank you.
Representative Pawlowski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a couple of questions, either to Representative Rukavina or to Mr. Burke. I see in the brief we have the governor's recs and the House recs. I'm interested in the Senate. If Mr. Berg or Representative Rukavina could tell me the difference between the Senate bill and the House bill, in particular for the MinSCU and University of Minnesota. And I'd like that, if possible, in two ways, the dollar amount and then the percent increase in tuition.
I'll let Mr. Berger. I know that Representative Pawlowski, there's about $100 million less in the Senate bill, so I'll let him give you the exact particulars as to how that breaks down at the U and NSCU.
Madam Chair, Mr. Berg. Representative Pawlowski, unfortunately, I can't give you a lot more information than that. In the last week, I've been kind of focused on this and have not had a lot of time to look at the Senate bill. Mm-hmm. It is about, I think, $96 million less than the House bill. And I can't off the top of my head tell you what is in there for the U and Minsky right now.
All right. Madam Chair?
Representative Rukavina.
Representative Pawlowski, I don't believe they have any, like the scholarship program that I put in for the university where the $7 million is out there, and they promised to try to match it 2-to-1 and set up an endowment for scholarships to middle-income people. The banding at the Greater Minnesota campuses of the U that costs about $2.4 million a year to urge students to take over 13 credits and helps fight on the tuition isn't in there, and I don't think any of the tuition buy-down is in the Senate bill, which is buys it down to 2% and 2% instead of 4% and 4%.
Representative Pawlowski.
Madam Chair, and again, either Representative Rukavina or Mr. Berg, this bill is holding tuition at 2%. My assumption is the Senate bill would be larger than 2%, maybe double. Mm-hmm. Would I be?
Yeah, it's 4% and 4%.
All right. I'm just trying to get a handle on where we may end up by the time session ends. It's a question I had asked earlier on another bill, and Representative Erickson was kind enough to pursue this. So I have one more question, and it deals with page 8, section B, 8.31 to page 9.3. Representative Rukavina, Mr. Berg, could you explain that language, please? What exact? This is page 8. 8.31 and then page 9.1 to 9.3. Can you explain that language, please?
Well,
Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, Representative Pawlowski, do you want me to be perfectly candid here? I had a lot to do with you.
Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, I have stated in this committee earlier, I'm definitely into both being candid and honest. I have left long ago fake and embarrassing, so let's go down the road of candid and honest. That would help.
It had a lot to do with your concerns about the central office, which you had expressed to me, and you know a lot more than I do about the whole higher education system, and you were chair of this committee for, I believe, 4 years, if not 6. So I listened to what you had, your concerns were, and I didn't cut the office, but I hope I kept it from growing. So.
Well, Madam Chair, Pawlowski. Thank you for that. But what exactly for the committee does this language do?
Well, I think the new technology money that's in there for Minsky at the $18 million the first year and the $12.5 million after that that's built in the base will put the any new technology out there in the, you know, D2L, or I hope it doesn't, if you can give me other language to clarify that.
No.
That we put it into the learning, more into the learning end of it than into the central office, and that that those new hirees, if there need to be, which I'm sure there needs to be, are located out there on the campuses that can listen to the concerns of staff and students out there.
No. Madam Chair.
Representative Pawlowski.
And Representative Rukavina, I agree with you on that. I'm trying to get a handle on, the request had initially been $70 million, and the proposal, at least as I had first heard it, was 70 new complement for the central office. My assumption is that this is a dramatic reduction, first of all, in the overall proposal, and that if there were new complement, as you said, it would be at the campus level. And my hope would be it wouldn't be $1 million per new complement, that Minsky could somehow find in its hundreds of employees in the central office a way to implement this without having to hire not only new people at the central office, but to park people at the campus level and disguise their employment by including it in the campuses, which has been one way the central office has managed to disguise employees over recent time periods. So are we looking at, if this would go into law, is this about $40 million, Representative Rukavina, of the 70, or is it less than that?
Representative Rukavina?
It's 30 and a half in this.
30 and a half? And Representative Rukavina, if it would go into effect, I applaud you for saying it's got to be at the campus level. My hope is that we don't see 30 employees popping up that are really central office employees, but disguised by a tag saying it's Winona State, Southeastern Tech College, Bemidji State University, and really they're an employee of the central office. I just make the point that that has been a dodge used by the central office in the past and something that you should be aware of. But I thank you for this.
Well,
I think
I'm
this
aware
is
of it.
Well done.
You know,
Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, there's a lot of time between now and the floor and conference committee for you to have more input if you so wish. I know that the central office has a little concern about this language, probably from the opposite end that you're having concern about it. So,
Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina, I have many concerns about the central office. The fact that it's the third largest campus in the system, the fact that it's the third largest budget and it doesn't have one student, the fact that we've had record increases in tuition, record debt, and that office continues to grow. I have many concerns about it. I share your concern. Thank you.
Madam Chair, did I just get a tongue lashing and not really know it? Or
as you said, there's opportunities for continued discussions as we go along. Anyone else with questions in general about the presentation, the bill? Representative Wardlow?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I was up at 6:30 reading through this bill, and I'd come across saying, I like that. I like the stuff in there for the grant program and the stuff in there for Minsk U and U of M and some of the monies that are in there for promoting bioscience and nanotechnology and basically just small business growth in general, especially for the greater Minnesota. I did see some things in there. I said, oh my, what's that in there for? And one of them was the meat packers Bill of Rights. That caused me great pause. And then I came to Article 7, Section 33. And
page?
It's on page 108. It starts there in the bottom. And when I looked at the next page, 109, it starts talking about any request by the federal government for the state to enter into some trade agreement, first there has to be four contact people, two from each body, the two leaders from each body or their appointee, and the request has to be sent to them, and then it's got to be sent further for a report by a deed and a Department of Administration, Department of Labor and Industry. There's about five of them. And these all have to give a report on the impact of the Minnesota economy. And also, this request can't be done except when we're in session. So if something happens in the summer that needs fast action, you got to wait till January, February before you can talk about it. So I called an attorney out in D.C. who is he's an international trade attorney for the largest firm in America, actually. And I said, what do you think about this language? So he pulled up the bill on the computer, and he started scratching his head and says, man, what is the legislature doing getting involved with federal trade? And he had some questions, and he said, is there a definition for trade? Is there a definition for trade policy, trade agreement? How does this impact with fast-track authority by the governor? Does it? Can the governor make some simple, quick agreements? And some of his impressions were that, number one, it expands the role of our state government in our economy, and especially with international trade. It may be preempted already by federal law. There are he's not sure, but you know, because this is right off the top of his head. Possible constitutional problems. It does foster protectionism, and it inhibits. He thinks it inhibits the development of free trade to the detriment of our state economy. So, you know, I was all set to vote for this bill just because I like the stuff it does for education. But when I read this part, I'm a no from the get-go. Unless you can talk me out of it somehow.
Well,
Representative Rukavina.
Representative Wardlow, first of all, you're a better person than I am. You got up at 6 o'clock, read this whole bill, and phoned that, and talked to a D.C. lawyer all before noon. That's better man than I. But let me tell you what this is. House File 1199 is this bill, and I had a hearing on this, and the members of the committee didn't seem to be that concerned about it. It was an initiative, I believe, by the AFL-CIO. I don't know if the AFL-CIO is in the audience. Somebody around here? But
it doesn't matter, Representative Rukavina. It's just for committee discussion.
It was some language suggested by them, and we were told at the time that other states have done this. They're just trying to get a handle on anything that's being done on international trade, and that the governor and the legislature know how it's going to affect us. And there was some concerns at first by, I believe, I can't remember if former Representative Rhodes was he the one that might have had some concerns early on about some reporting requirements that were taken out. And so, I don't know, it didn't seem to cause that much of a concern. Representative Ruth probably remembers the hearing, and former Representative Rhodes came up and talked and didn't seem that concerned. So, I mean, if you do have some concerns, and I don't know what that lawyer from out in D.C. told you, but we can talk about it. If you're concerned about it, we can work on it between here and the floor even, or we should have time between now and when this bill gets to the floor, because it has to go through finance after Easter, and or after we're gone for that Easter week. So, well, you and I can discuss it, but I'm not going to delete it here because you're concerned today, because it did not seem, Representative Eastland can confirm it also, that it caused that much of an uproar. I mean, there were questions about it, but so.
Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Rukavina, I don't know where to start and stop, but I'm just going to pick some things out. On page 108, line 4, workforce enhancement fee, it appears to me that in reading this that you've given the Commissioner of Deed the authority to increase the unemployment tax from, because you've raised it, it was supposed to go down to 0.085. You've taken that out to make it back up to 0.10, and it appears to me you've given them authority to raise it to 0.12 if they decide that they need more money. Am I reading that right?
That would be
Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, Representative Demmer, that would be correct.
Representative Demmer.
Well, Madam Chair, I wish I could say I was as diligent as Representative Wardlow, because I have not read the bill word for word all the way through. Can you give me an idea of how many more places in here you've given authority to people or to commissioners or whoever to raise fees on businesses and taxes on businesses to pay for things you think are necessary without having to go through anything in the legislature?
Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, this would be, I think, the only place I got this language from, I believe, Representative Gunther or then Representative McElroy did the same thing when they were chair of the Economic Development Workforce Committee. It was the exact same language that I can't remember if it was Representative Gunther or Representative McElroy had, because of the stress that's been placed on the Workforce Development Fund because of the cuts on the general fund and taking some of those programs that even the Republicans didn't want to eliminate that dealt with youth employment and those types of things. It's, you know, in hope and anticipating that if something major happened, a major layoff like Ford or something like that, that in case because of the placement of a number of different programs, and if you go to that Workforce Development article, they're in there what's been placed in the fund, and I don't spend any more money in that fund or out of that fund than Representative Gunther or his predecessor, Representative McElroy, did. In fact, it's exactly the same, I believe. I'm spending a little less money out of that fund. I'm saving a little portion for the Fresh Air Act or Freedom to Breathe or whatever it is, because I'm worried about a lot of waiters, waitresses, bartenders, so I saved a little money. But this is the same similar language that I can't remember, maybe Mr. Gelbman can help me if it was Representative Gunther or Representative McElroy that used this language. I'm not sure. Could I have Mr. Gelbman help
me? Mr. Gelbman.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Representative Lucadina, I'm not sure either. It was in Laws of Minnesota, 2003, Chapter 128. So whoever was chair...
Representative Gunther, I think it would have been then.
Thank you. Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Well, thanks for the history lesson. My bigger concern is if there's other places in here, then you said there aren't any other places
there's
where they can do that sort of thing.
There's statutory authority for a commissioner to raise.
Okay. If I can ask one more question at this point.
Representative Demmer.
Representative Rukavina, on page 11, line 4, there's a $100,000 grant here for a Minnesota public post-secondary institution with a total enrollment under 7,000 for a women's hockey team, Division One of the WCHA. They get $100,000 to use every year for their hockey program. How many schools get or qualify for that, Representative Rukavina, and which schools are they?
I would say one, maybe.
Representative Rukavina.
Two, but one doesn't have a hockey team.
I honestly don't know which ones they are.
Yeah, it's Bemidji State, and the program is struggling, and the University of Minnesota, I believe, in their base has $8 million for Title IX programs. The president or the chancellor at UMB told me they get about $800,000 a year there to help with their women's sports, and Bemidji got none of that. And so I, because of the cuts that have been made up there, was concerned. There are Division I hockey team, and this is a hockey state. And so I thought since the university's two teams were given help, and this one was struggling, that I'd give them a little help.
Representative
and I
Demmer.
Know, Representative Demmer, that you're not against women's sports, so I know you've probably done.
Well, Representative Rukavina, you're correct about that. I am not. I guess that's an earmark. I guess we'll just have to take. I really didn't know who it was. I thought it was very interesting, Representative Rukavina.
And it could, if Southwest State can get a team by, you know, we can.
Well, and we do have Minnesota State Mankato. I think we have St. Cloud. There's some others. I think you can the line is forming at your door, Representative Rukavina.
And are they in the Division One?
Well, they are in men.
They're over 7,000 in
that's right,
in students. Plus, we built, a big stadium for St. Cloud when Representative Knobloch was bonding chair. So we helped them out.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Heigerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I was going to try to stay quiet after yesterday. And I, too, spent a good part of the morning with Representative Wardlow going over the bill, and I tried to get, as you well know, some amendments offered at a later stage, not within the 24 hours. But what I have concern is the whole Article 7. There isn't much in that article I like, and of particular interest to me is Section 15, which I'm very familiar with, and Section 16.
Could we have pages?
Page 97. Section 7, Article 7, Section 15 and 16. Madam Chair, we did hear that bill in ag. It's an ag-related bill that was pulled out of ag because it could not pass. We referred to a committee such as this where the ag issues never were discussed. And I become very concerned when you're going out after my a leading employer in my district, and in Representative Junkies and Representative Tremba's district. And we're going to do legislation that affects them dramatically. Representative Rukavina, if you would explain to me what I see all this new underlined language. My understanding that perhaps none of this may be new language. Why is it underlined?
Representative Rukavina.
Well, Madam Chair, I believe this a lot of this is the Hansen House File 643 bill. It's in the Department of Labor and Industry, so it's under the auspices of this committee. And my understanding is it is new language, and the ombudsman in language in there is just for an enforcement type person, just to do that out of the workers' comp fund to try to help keep you know, with safety issues, and so there's not injuries or workers' comp type things. And there's other language in here, you're right, that deals with workers' rights, I guess. And I'm a member of the Democratic Farmer Labor Party, and I got requested to put it in there, so I, you know, like you, I know I met all your brothers and that over in Freeport, and they told me they were all Democrats and wondered what happened to you, but they still like you and vote for you. I know that. They told me that, too. you know, what can I say? I mean, I have a soft spot in my heart for the working people of this state, regardless of where they work, so I included it in the bill. But if you have some real specific concerns about this, I am more than willing to sit down with Representative Hansen and you and go over this. I didn't have Representative Junkie express any concern on it, but if you're worried about it, about some of this language, we can work over the Easter vacation on it. I'll come to Freeport. You can come to the range, actually. I know you'd rather do that, so you can come up and we can maybe on Good Friday or something, we can see what we can do.
Representative Heigerken.
Madam Chair, thank you, and thank you, Representative Rukavina. And I do, I think that you would, in all honesty, sit down. And I think this is something that we can sit down and visit. And I think we can have a frank discussion of where this is going and why. It gives the appearance of the meatpacking plants. I know they had the Senate, Senator Metzen's bill was stripped pretty much of what was there. Here. I think if we have the same frank discussion, I think you two will probably end up agreeing with us. I do have, Madam Chair, if I may,
Representative
when we were looking at, if you turn to page 114, having to do with wages, section 8, article 8, section 9, line 114.10. It refers to reprisals and retaliation. And this is an issue that, Representative Rukavina, I have been an employer of people for many years, and I've had as many as 40 people on my payroll. And I know for a fact if you're an employer, there's no. I see employee rights in this bill drawn up, but I do not see any employer rights. If you dismiss somebody for showing up late to work, the place may be full. In my particular business, I run a restaurant business. If laborers show up late, I lose customers. And if I dismiss them, they can retaliate. I have businesses in my district that I'm working with right now. A person had a bakery and dismissed an employee, and this employee, turn this person into OSHA and everybody else. Once there is a complaint filed, OSHA by law is required to come in and do investigations. And again, you have to be careful when you legislate that you don't over-legislate, you forget about the employer. And I think in that piece of, whoever drew that piece of legislation up, that I'm hoping too that we can have a frank discussion there as well.
Madam Chair.
Representative,
this is the Karen Clark's bill on whistleblowers. It deals only with public employees, and we were very careful to make sure that it only dealt with public employees. There's been a number of public employees that have tried to discuss concerns of the general public, health concerns and those types of things, and they lost their jobs because they came out and talked. So this is only public employees.
Okay. Representative Heiger.
Madam Chair, thank you, and I appreciate that clarification. One other question. I'm not going to go on Article 8 all day, but on page 117, if you would clarify section, it would be section 15, subdivision 4, independent contractor. Would this in any way affect, if this bill were to be passed, I'm looking at the definition. Within my district, I have a lot of independent contractors, whether they be carpet layers that work with a carpet company, whether it be sheetrockers, whether it be, I can go on and on, landscapers, I can go on, and that's a good part of rural Minnesota. Would that in any effect, this piece of legislation, affect the way they operate right now, these independent contractors?
Madam Chair,
Representative Rukavina.
Representative Heiger, can you know that I have concerns like you about all-encompassing mm-hmm. legislation, how real-life situations mm-hmm. get harmed because of that. I don't believe so. Representative Eastland can reassure you, if I don't, that he also had the same concern. We worked with the attorneys from the Department of Labor and Industry. I think I saw the attorneys up there. We came up with some language that we hope addressed that and emphasize that those people were not affected. I don't know if Representative Eastland's totally happy with the fee. I think he's okay with it, but he was concerned we nicked them for another $50, but we got it down and we made sure that those people were not, it's a clarification that no, we're not after Joe's window finishing company as an independent contractor.
Representative Heigerken.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My concern is whether or not they would be required to get a contractor exemption certificate.
Representative Rukavina. Madam Chair, they are, but they get a reduced one if they also have the, it's on page 123, subdivision 14, the fee itself. I was looking for it. Thank you, Mr. Berg. And that's the language we came up with to address your concern and Representative Eastland's concern.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I will follow up on this, but thank you.
And Representative Rukavina, Representative Heigerken did send a message to me this morning that he did have two amendments that he would like consideration for, but I had within 10 minutes before that, I had already told Representative Mike Nelson, who wanted an amendment in here, that it was past time, and he could not. And so Representative Heigerken, I said it's past time, too.
But you wanted.
I looked at him. Any other discussion on the bill as a whole?
One more.
Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Rukavina, I'm going to look at that same section that Representative Heidgerken was just looking at. On page 118, underneath the qualifications that you need to have to apply for this independent contractor exemption certificate. Now, first of all, I'm going under the assumption that you have to have one of these exemption certificates. Otherwise, you can't go and offer yourself to do services for people as an independent contractor. I'm going to assume that that's correct. Is that the way this
Representative Rukavina?
Yes.
Okay, Representative Rukavina, a quick question. Do you have anybody in your district that that has like a sewer cleaning business or a window washing business, some sort of business that they operate, say, from their home or for someplace else like that, where their wife maybe does the bookkeeping from the kitchen table and they go out on their own?
Yes.
Representative Rukavina?
Yes, Madam Chair, I do.
Well, Representative Rukavina, one of the qualifications for getting an independent contractor's license so you don't put your friend out of business is that he has to maintain a separate business with an office, equipment, materials, and other facilities. So are you going to ask them to build an office and have equipment and materials and facilities in there so they look like an office in order to go out and do that business so they can continue to be an independent contractor? Or will they have to start working for somebody else now?
No.
Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, the gist of this whole bill is that there are people, employers that hire people and tell them and have them sign a piece of paper. And they sign the paper. They don't know what they're doing a lot of the times. Other times, maybe they do. And they say they're an independent contractor. And then, you know, but they're not really. They're an employee. Then they get hurt. And then they have to come to the workers' comp special fund. And the state has to take care of what was the responsibility of the employer who was supposed to be carrying the workers' comp or maybe other unemployment comp. Unemployment insurance, that's what this is trying to get around. And I know that the Department of Labor and Industry has been working on this under a lot of commissioners, I believe it would be safe to say, and under Commissioner Brenner even, they're working on this. That's what this bill is trying to get at. If you're an independent contractor, then you take and you sign this form, and we'll explain to you what you're doing and find out if you really are an independent contractor and you understand that if you fall off a roof while you're roofing for somebody, then you don't have unemployment, workers' comp insurance. You're in a big world of hurt. And so that's what they was trying to do. It doesn't have anything to do with the independent contractor having he or his wife working on the books and being in the house and nothing to do with that whatsoever.
Representative Demmer.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Rukavina.
Yes.
They can't be an independent contractor under your bill unless they have an independent contractor's exemption certificate. And they can't get a certificate unless they have an office, equipment, materials, and other facilities. That's what it says here. And it also says that they have to operate under contracts to perform specific services for specific amounts of money and under which individual controls performing services. In other words, I don't think they can work by the hour either. They have to have a contract signed and sealed before they can come out and pump your sewer or to clean out your septic. That's why I'm seeing this, because I have guys do this for me in my businesses all the time. They're independent contractors. They don't have a fancy office. They work out of their trucks. They do whatever. The guy that works out of my pump, out of my farm, he doesn't have a fancy office. But I don't think he'd be able to get an exemption certificate under your bill here because he doesn't have an office. And so maybe we'd have to have a program so we can go out and build an office then. Otherwise, he can't qualify.
Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, it has nothing to do with that. I see Representative Nelson's in the audience. There's the attorney from the Department of Labor Industry in the audience. If you want them to reassure you that I'm not doing some sleight of hand to hurt your little independent contractor, I'll have them, Madam Chair, come down and reassure you. But in no way does this do what you're thinking it does. All it does is require them to get that independent contractor certificate. And the only concern we had when we had a full hearing in the committee on this a couple of times was that Representative Eastland's concern, which was the same as Representative Heigerkin's, and we solved that, we thought. Although I like the idea of a new capital bonding project for building offices around Minnesota, but that's not what this bill does.
Well, Madam Chair,
Representative Demmer.
Representative, we don't have to beat this anymore, but it says the individual sworn statement that the individual meets all of the following conditions, and it lists them, and the office is one of them. And Representative Rukavina, it's not more clear than that, and I don't think I need an attorney to tell me that that's what it says.
Madam Chair, I know you don't want to take testimony from the audience, but how about if our attorney refers?
I said yesterday that I would take the governor or the commissioner. And so if the governor comes, I will listen to him. Or if the commissioner comes, I will listen to the commissioner.
Maybe our counsel could reaffirm. But I've just been told by the author of the bill, Representative Nelson, that everything you're concerned about is existing law.
Shouldn't be underlined then.
Oh, Representative Rukavina.
Nothing more, ma'am.
No, oh. Representative Rukavina. On page 120, line 7, page 121, line 4, page 121, line 8, page 121, line 18. Page 121, line 20 to 32. Those lines are incorrect. Those lines are in the amendment that is going to be heard in finance because the amendment was too late for today. Those lines and pages are incorrect in this bill. For future reference, those lines are incorrect. Those are what Representative Nelson has in his amendment that is going to be taken up in finance. This was a previous, what got in here was a previous engrossment.
Okay. Madam Chair, whatever you say.
Representative Demmer, I'm sorry I didn't catch that sooner. Ms. Gosek told me, Gosek, that's what Mike Nelson's amendment was all about. And so what you're talking about will be corrected by the language in Mike Nelson's, Representative Nelson's amendment that will be heard in finance.
Thank you.
I'm sorry I wasn't quicker, Representative Rugovina. Is that correct, Ms. Gosek? No?
No. I don't believe so, Madam Chair.
Oh.
Madam Chair?
Maybe Ms. Novak? Can help
I believe that is correct, that there was an engrossment that the committee didn't have, and so the wrong engrossment got into this bill inadvertently. Also, to address some of Representative Demmer's concerns, on page 117, lines 21 to 23, there is a limited application of these requirements. And it's limited to only individuals performing public or private commercial or residential building construction or improvement. It would not apply to pumping sewers, for example.
Okay.
Thank you. But, Ms. Novak, is it your understanding that there will be a corrected amendment for the Finance Committee?
That's my understanding, Madam Chair. Okay.
So, Representative Demmer, can you trust us enough for today and wait till Finance?
Absolutely, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative.
Madam Chair.
Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was going to point that out to Representative Demmer also. And my concern regarding the double hit that was referred to earlier is that since this only applies to residential building construction, most residential building contractors or remodeling contractors already have a license. It's called a contractor's license. And now we're telling them that it's not a contractor's license, that they have to go back and get a contractor's license. Subcontractor license. And my point is that seems to be very redundant. And what I was hoping to accomplish was, if you have a residential building contractor's license, which most of the people that are doing this will have, then they shouldn't be required to go back and get another one and pay another $100. And I don't think the fix in the bill really addresses that. It still just kind of adds another layer of bureaucracy on these people and requires them to pay another fee. And it doesn't go far enough, as far as I see, to solve the issue.
Representative
Heigerken. Madam Chair, sorry about bringing this issue up, starting it all. But I just, would you, can I get some...
Representative Heigerken.
Can I get Ms. Kozak some comments on Representative Easton just did? Is that correct? Is his interpretation correct? As you see it?
I can hear the question, okay. Representative Heigerken.
I'm wondering if what Representative Easton just spelled out, if that would be correct with her understanding of where we're at right now. I need clarification.
Okay. Ms. Novak.
Madam Chair, Representative Heigerken, yes, if they are required to get a license under current law to be a remodeler or building contractor, under this proposed law, they would be required to get an exemption.
Are there any other questions on the bill as a whole? Hearing no other questions on the bill as a whole, shall we take the proposed amendments that were turned in on time? A30, Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this, of course, as we all know, is the Dream Act. And I appreciate, Representative Rukavina, that you tried to fix it a little bit, putting in an application, but it's really very broad language. I mean, it says we'll file an application to become a permanent resident at the earliest opportunity the individual is eligible to do so. And I'm not just exactly sure how soon an earliest opportunity might be, but the main thing, we've heard a lot of testimony about this with all things from the veterans to being illegal is plain just against the law to being federal law prohibits it. But the main issue here is that the governor says he will veto it if it's in the bill, and it kills the whole bill. We have a good bill, members, and so I would urge you to vote for this, to remove this from this bill and let the bill go on its own so that it doesn't kill this entire bill. And I would request a roll call, Madam Chair.
Yes. Roll call has been requested. Is there any other discussion? Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I sat on the Conference Committee for Higher Ed, I believe it was 4 years ago, when we had this in the bill. I was a co-author of this initiative at that time. And basically, we were sitting with the same issue that we are today, that the governor was going to veto the bill with it in. And so, as a conference committee, we were forced with the decision of having it vetoed or taking it out, and we took it out. I think that same situation exists today. And I think there are some things that have occurred. Many of the colleges, the Minsky colleges, have eliminated out-state tuition. There are opportunities for many of the immigrants who are caught in this situation, and I think this is clearly, in my opinion, the direction we need to be looking at going in the future. I just don't think it's time to do it right now, and I will be supporting the amendment for that reason. But, Madam Chair, I think it's something that in the future we need to continue to work on, and I appreciate the people that are bringing this before us and keeping the pressure on.
Representative Rukavina.
Well, Madam Chair, I hope the committee would leave the language that's in there now that I've corrected in there. You know, we are a nation of immigrants. You've heard that said many times, but I want to be perfectly clear for the members that that these young people, some of whom may be in the audience today, should not be held accountable for something that their parents did. They have gone to our schools for 3 years at least, it says here. We've educated them, and the least we can do is let them continue on at the same cost as their the students who sat next to them in their high school. They don't qualify for any of our grant money. You know, that's perfectly clear in this in the law. And I'm hoping, Representative Eastland, that I can convince the governor that his Polish roots are no different than their Hispanic roots in this case. So, you know, I look around this committee and I see Pulowskis and Krantzes, and even though Rood isn't an uncommon name, you know, Representative Maria Rood and I are probably long-distance cousins. I'm hoping she starts acting like me soon. But
no!
She and I came, her grandfather and my grandfather came from the little 20-house village in Croatia together to the Iron Range. Her maiden name is Hekimovic, you know, and we end up here together. What an opportunity for us as the grandchildren of immigrants to be in the Minnesota legislature like Representative Mariani. We all have dreams and ambitions, and I don't want to destroy anybody's dreams because maybe their parents did something that was not correct under the law. So I'm hoping you leave it in and we can talk to the governor and maybe reach some kind of conclusion that can accomplish what we're trying to accomplish here and educate these people to be someday in the legislature like we are.
and educate them to be the workforce that we, everyone at this table knows we need to keep Minnesota running as a good economic machine that it has been. So I would appreciate a no vote, Madam Chair.
Representative Ruth.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I certainly appreciate that, and I don't think there's anyone that doesn't want these kids to succeed, absolutely. And I certainly want them to succeed. And what I would like to see our legislature do, and all of us personally, I'd like to see us try to help the kids become citizens, because that's really what it's all about, so that they aren't getting, so that the other citizens that we have aren't getting a worse deal. We know that there are 11 colleges that do not have any change in the tuition now. But I'd like to see, I really would like to see us work on that to help these kids, because that's really what it's all about. But in this case, the governor is going to veto it. He has stated he will. And so I just don't see that this is a place for it in this bill. So I
Madam Chair,
the
governor has a dream, too, maybe to be vice president. So maybe he'll work on this with me. So.
Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate your comments, Representative Rukavina, and I agree with them. I have spoken to the governor. I'm sure you are more persuasive than me, but I have spoken to him personally on this issue, encouraging him to be more open-minded, and at this point, we haven't seen that happen.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I hope, Representative Rukavina, that you will emphasize the issue of workforce. I have served on the Governor's Workforce Development Council for the past 7 years, and we have talked about the shortage of workers for the future. We've also talked about the ability of our country to compete in a global society and the fact that all of our workers will need higher levels of education. All of these students are going to be our workers of the future. They are going to be here. We need to have them educated to the highest ability possible. And I think in order for us to compete in a global society, to maintain our democracy, we're going to need all of these young people. So I hope you're very persuasive with the governor.
Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I'll be brief. I think Representative Rukavina spoke pretty eloquently to this issue. I just want to quickly answer the question Representative Ruth asked about the language of the earliest opportunity the individual is eligible to do so. That's when they turn 18. As minors, they can't do this. And so once they're adults, they'll be able to do that. At least that's my understanding of the law. I just want to quickly say that I think one of the things that I've enjoyed chairing the Education Policy Committee and serving on the K-12 and on this committee is that there's a real strong sense of ethic in our state around valuing education. It's very strong. And it doesn't matter if you're Republican or Democrat, rural, urban. That's one of the things, one of the main things I think binds us together as Minnesotans. And I think that this provision really is very much in keeping with that value, that regardless of the difficulty here in terms of some of the issues related to immigration, which are going to change, regardless of that, we feel a real strong sense, a desire to be consistent in our message with all young people that education is of primacy. It's of utmost importance, and that we don't want to be in a position where we're telling a classroom where you're going to have undocumented students sitting next to documented students that education is important, but it's not important for you. I think it's very important for us to be concerned about that message. I think regardless of your status, all children are going to be listening for that kind of consistency. I am hopeful that the governor will be flexible on this. I know there's been some very behind-the-scenes discussions about some creative solutions to this. Obviously, the governor has not indicated publicly or even privately, for that matter, a preference, but I am hopeful that there is a solution here, and I think by keeping this provision here, it'll allow us to be able to move forward and have that conversation with him. It's a very important conversation for our state and for our community. So, members, I would ask you to oppose the amendment, and we'll look forward to continuing to work bipartisan as we have been, both at the national and state level on this issue together.
Any other discussion? Not, the clerk will take the roll.
Representative Rukavina.
No.
Representative Peterson.
No.
Representative Greiling.
No.
Representative Mariani.
No.
Representative Slawick.
No.
Representative Murphy.
No.
Representative Demmer.
Yes.
Representative Abler. Representative Brown.
No.
Representative Bunn.
No.
Representative Eastland.
Yes.
Representative Erickson. Representative Garofalo.
Yes.
Representative Hamilton. Representative Heidgerken.
Yes.
Representative Hornstein is excused. Representative Kranz.
Yes.
Representative Mason.
No.
Representative Pulowski.
Yes.
Representative Ruth.
Yes.
Representative Rude.
No.
Representative Tilbury.
No.
Representative Ward.
No.
Representative Wardlow.
Yes.
Representative Eastland.
On a vote of 7 to 12, the amendment is not adopted. Amendment 831, Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This, I'd like to move 831, and I've already spoken about this at Representative Rukavina about trying to get more money back into the governor's GI bill. And for the reasons stated, I think it's a worthy bill to have a little more money into, so when it runs out, it won't run out quite so fast. But when I look at the bill, it takes money from TEACH, it takes money from some places that foster small business growth. The TEACH part bothered me because one of my best, a good friend of mine would be sorely affected by that, although the TEACH should be in the early childhood section, I believe. But I just want to make a point that I think we should try to restore the governor's $5 million back to the bill, but I'm going to withdraw the amendment.
Thank you, Representative Wardlow. Amendment A32. Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Amendment A32, do I have to move it?
Representative Eastland recommends adoption or moves to adopt A32.
If you turn in the bill to page 42 and you can see what's happening here. But basically, this is some language that's changing the makeup of the Minsky board. And I just have some concerns about what we're doing philosophically to the makeup of the board and how we're creating the new board. What we're adding on line 4 on 43, line 4 is we're adding two members. We're saying the two members must be members of the AFL-CIO, and then in the section 42, we're saying the AFL-CIO is responsible for recruiting and recommending those individuals. And what I'm concerned about is that what we're doing here is we're taking one special interest group and we're giving some extra attention to that group. There are lots of trade organizations, labor organizations, professional organizations, business organizations who would love to have representatives on this board. And I think what we should be looking for is a board that is selected, and if we want to do something in a generic kind of way to say we want representation from different kinds of segments of the society, I'd be amenable to that. But I think to pick out one special interest group and give them special attention and special presence on the board is really inappropriate, and I would just recommend that we just delete this language.
Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, Representative Eastland, you know, I appreciate your concern about special interest, but members, let me come at it from my perspective. You know, my initial bill on this, I had five members from the different teachers' unions and MAPE and AFSCME and I can't remember who else I had on there. I think an AFL-CIO member and IFO and the two-year union. Because I thought people in the trenches should be able to have a say. There's students on there now. The governor and the previous governor have not put any labor people at all on there. And right now, Representative Eastland, the president of the Chamber of Commerce is on there. I think a person from the business partnership is on there. In fact, they're almost all business people. And I don't know if they send their kids to public school or private school. But I was trying to give some input from those people that work in that system. And if you want to help me accomplish that, I will be more than willing to work with you to put the people who are in the trenches at our community colleges, our technical schools, our four-year universities, and give them a little bit of say on the way that their institution is run. Because right now, Representative Eastland, and for at least the last, I think I tried to go back about 10 or 12 years, Mr. Gelman, and we couldn't find one union person on that's been on the Minsky board in over a decade. And I don't think that's right. So I'd like to work with you if you want to specify that the business partnership and the chamber have a member on there. I'd be more than happy to do that with you, but they already do.
Representative Heigerkin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I agree with Representative Eastland's amendment here. I have a difficult time as well. Why not the Farmers Union and the Farm Bureau, or if why not Ed Minnesota? If anybody should be on there, probably should be Ed Minnesota, that kind of represents the teachers and that are doing all the teaching to get these kids to that point. We'll start and draw. I'd much rather see Ed Minnesota be one of the members. It's more reflective of the entire state of Minnesota. And we could open this up for some real good conversation and probably have the 134 members of the House decide who should be on there. But rather just pick the AFL-CIO, I have a very difficult time with it. Thank you.
Madam Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
I would accept that Ed Minnesota as a friendly amendment as one of the two members. So if I can incorporate that in the somehow in the amendment, I'll take that as a friendly amendment.
Representative Heigerkin moves to
make Ed Minnesota one of the members.
So you want to change 2 to 3?
No, just keep 2. One of the two is going to be Ed Minnesota.
I accept that as a friendly amendment. Me and my buddy are buddies.
Madam Chair, is he amending my amendment? Madam Chair?
Representative Eastland.
Is that an amendment to my amendment? Mr. Hacker, I withdraw my amendment.
Thank you, Representative.
Well, Madam Chair, that's all I have.
Representative Grimey. Oh. A-40, or 649.
Madam Chair, I move 649, the amendment on hair braiding.
Representative Rukavina.
Madam Chair, technical correction to the Greiling amendment. It should be delete page 2 and insert page 111 after line, delete 31, insert 27. And you don't need a section 6, you need section 1. So line 1.2, delete 2 and insert 111. Delete 31 and insert 27. And on line 1.3, delete 6 and insert 1. Then it fits into the bill.
Okay. On amendment 649, line 2, delete the number 2 and insert 111. Delete 31. And insert 27. On line 1.3, delete 6, insert 1.
Madam Chair, I would accept this as a friendly amendment. There isn't a cost. I think it was passed somewhere, but it didn't get to my committee. It was passed in Commerce. It's a concern on the Barber's Board to bring in the hair braiders in line with the other treatments and requirements that the cosmetologists and barbers and everybody else has. So I appreciate it. Yes.
Is there any discussion? All in favor of adoption of Amendment 649 as corrected, signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? The motion is adopted. I don't have any other amendments, Representative Rukavina, but I do have a letter to the question I asked you in Higher Ed Division about the University of Minnesota contract at Crookston, and you received a letter about that?
I did, Madam Chair, but I have to dig it out of my portfolio here. So I know it's in here somewhere, and I believe I gave you a copy.
I have a copy.
Oh, here it is right here.
Oh, good.
I've got it filed right here.
Do you want to tell us the gist of the letter from President Brunix that talks about the negotiations and the progress of negotiations and settlement of the contract at Crookston?
Well, Madam Chair, I think President Brunix is saying that about a week and a half ago, they offered presented another offer. The university presented the University Education Association, their union, with another offer, and I guess it's pending. They're going to put it to a vote to their membership, so your concern and mine and of other members of Northeastern Minnesota with the way the Duluth teachers were being affected by being combined in this union, it looks like, are being met, and we will follow this as this bill progresses through the House into conference committee.
I appreciate that.
Madam Chair, can I trust that you'll keep this letter so I can light my suits are getting ruined. My legislative agenda has been getting thicker by the day. And so.
Do you have any concluding remarks?
No, I don't, Madam Chair.
Well, Representative Rukavina, in my perusal of the bill, I have to compliment you on the attention to trying to have a balanced bill that brings us steps into the future, just as the K-12 bill did and the early childhood learning bill did, for our students, and the attention to the issues that transcend this transcend the various divisions that we've talked about in this committee. Education and lifelong learning has been addressed. Scholarships have been addressed. Tuition has been addressed. Libraries have been addressed. Workforce development, Minnesota workers, and economic development are all contained in here, and it seems to me that it brings us up, and so we can go forth into the future, and it sets a good base for the next time around when we do appropriations. And I think it's a balanced bill that your committee should be complimented on and that we can vote for.
Well, Madam Chair, I had a good committee on both sides of the aisle, and I've been told by people that know a lot more than me that there hasn't been this good of a bill for higher education since the last century when Representative Pawlowski was the chair. So.
Is there any other discussion? Yes, Representative Demmer.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I've had this conversation. Are we done now, Madam Chair? Are we going to have more committee meetings?
We have to vote.
No, I mean after this committee meeting is over, are we going to have more?
There are no meetings scheduled, but we may be called together again.
Sure. Well, first of all, Madam Chair, I would like to... first I'll comment on the bill. Representative Rukavina, I think you've done some good things for higher ed in here. We can disagree about whether this was the right thing, was that the right thing, or whatever, but I think when we're talking higher ed, there's lots of things we can do that are some good stuff. And I like that part of it. I think it's very unfortunate that we have a higher ed bill cloaking over another bill that does a lot of harm to job providers in the state of Minnesota. It's very disappointing to me. That's an overriding fact. I'm going to have to vote against your bill. I think it's unfortunate. You've been thrust in a situation where you had to include that in with what's good education stuff. I've been voting for the education bills. I think they're good. And we can argue back and forth, like I said, whether we like this part of education, that part of education. There are lots of good areas of education. We all have our emphasis. And so for that reason, I would support probably what you've done in higher ed. But I really, really have a hard time with some of the stuff that's in Article 7 and some of those other pages, and I'm quite frankly disappointed. So I'm going to have to go against the bill because of that. So having said that, Madam Chair, I'd like to compliment you again on your process here in this committee. I just wanted to compliment you again, as I've done the last couple of days, on the process in the committee. It's been consistently open. We've had a chance to voice our concerns, and I want to thank you for this session. We've had a good opportunity to vet lots of things about education, and that's really where we've spent our time in this committee, is in education, and maybe we should have spent more time on some of the other things. I don't know, and we could talk about that. But again, thank you very much for the work that you've done and for your efforts.
You're welcome. Representative Wardlow.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was all set to vote for this bill until I read Article 7, especially Section 33, which I think is extremely egregious. On the other hand, you are rivaling Representative Mariani as chair. I'm not gonna say one is better than the other yet. You know, and I didn't sit on Representative Greiling, so the jury's out on that one yet. But
thank you.
Madam Chair, my chopped liver over here or what?
Yes. Just kidding.
Is there any further discussion on the bill?
Madam Chair, roll call, please.
Representative Demmer asks for a roll call.
Yep.
Are you going for Health and Human Services? Representative Mariani.
Madam Chair, I thought I'd take advantage of this opportunity since we've done some sort of end of regular committee time acknowledgement, just to acknowledge your leadership on this committee. This has been a new structure for us members, and one of my concerns over the years, Madam Chair, has been the temptation for higher ed, early childhood, K-12 education to go off in different directions. And I think it's really important for us to have the ability beyond the House floor, which is the ultimate place, but to have the ability to slow down, reflect, look at what the interconnects are between, particularly in education, between what I consider a continuous pathway when you look at it from the point of view of the student. You know, from the moment they enter an early childhood program and hopefully out to the point that they finish a college certificate or a college degree, it really is one long journey. It really is one pathway. And in many ways, what happens anywhere along that pathway has tremendous impacts for other parts of the pathway. If we're not doing really good early childhood development work, that has a direct impact on college attendance. If we're not engaging our college-level students and the delivery of instruction at that level in a meaningful way, in a holistic way, then we're missing out opportunities to influence back up the pathway. And this is a big issue, particularly in the achievement gap area, where a lot of low-income students, and frankly even low-income students, regardless of color, may not see themselves in a post-secondary situation, and so it really begs for post-secondary to be involved in the early grades and then vice versa. So I think that this has been a good experiment for us to have this committee where we can look for the connects. I think you've been very diligent and mindful of adopting that big picture and helping us all to think about a different way to look at what our educational efforts beyond our silo approach to doing that. So I just want to express my appreciation for your leadership in this committee and reflecting those values and the empowerment that you help these committees and myself as a committee chair to feel empowered being connected with the other committees. So I want to thank you for your leadership.
You're welcome, and I appreciate that. But our work is not done.
Madam Chair.
Representative Rukavina.
Since everyone else has given you praise and kudos, I want to just thank you for always for your 21 years or more of friendship. You know, I worked with your brother for years, and he's a little more, well, he's different than you. But So, we're good friends, and I appreciate your guidance and sometimes your motherly advice, almost big sister advice, in keeping me, you know,
big
getting
sister.
Too excited. Yes,
and I have a tree that died over the winter, Representative Rukavina, so you and your chainsaw are very welcome at my yard.
For the committee's information, I am her big, strong lumberjack. So.
Clerk will call the roll.
Moving right along.
Yes.
Representative Rukavina.
Yes.
Representative Peterson.
Yes.
Representative Greiling.
Yes.
Representative Mariani.
Yes.
Representative Slawick.
Yes.
Representative Murphy.
Yes.
Representative Demmer.
No.
Representative Brown.
Yes.
Representative Bunn.
Yes.
Representative Eastland. Representative Erickson. Representative Garofalo.
No.
Representative Heidgerken.
No.
Representative Kranz.
Yes.
Representative Mason.
Yes.
Representative Pelosi.
Yes.
Representative Ruth.
No.
Representative Rude.
Yes.
Representative Tilbury.
Yes.
Representative Ward.
Yes.
Representative Wardlow.
No.
Yes. 14 yeses, 5 noes. House File 797, First Committee Engrossment, was recommended to pass as amended and will be referred to Finance Committee. Members, I would like to thank our pages, Sonia Austin and Megan Swanberg, Laura Sales, House Caucus Research, Carmen Carter, Republican Caucus Research, House researchers from above that come down on a frequent basis, the fiscal analyst staff, Philip Chan, our clerk, Christina Gossick, our committee administrator, and all of you and anyone else that had input into this bill or the two previous bills. Thank you very, very much. This meeting is adjourned.